We'll start our cannabis history tour on a long green couch at the Emerald Cup, next to a few sets of headphones where visitors can listen to oral histories about cannabis in the age of prohibition. That's where I found Joe Hoover, founder of the 420 Archive Project, an attempt to catalog a history that is rapidly disappearing. 420 is kind of a magic number in the world of cannabis, with late afternoon on April 20th as a worldwide stoner holiday. It used to be a semi-secret code, but it's safe to say the secret's out now. Hoover sees parallels between the prohibition of alcohol and that of cannabis, especially in the shortage of documentation. For about 5 years now, he's been traveling into the far corners of Northern California, gathering the stories of medical marijuana patients, activists, and back-to-the-land growers.
What's that experience been like for you?
It is a privilege, first of all, and it's a very difficult privilege. It is not like you can go into a VFW and interview World War II veterans. You have to drive for a long time, go into mountains to meet somebody who may say that they're tired or not feeling good that day. I think for many historians, this is a once-in-a-lifetime project.
Hoover is from Minnesota and travels to California whenever he can. It's taken time to win the trust of a traditionally discreet population. Still, he's managed to gather some compelling narratives.
We also have somebody who grows marijuana, has done it for decades, and she's allergic to it. So she doesn't smoke it, but she's used it to help raise her family. We also have, there's a great story of a large gay commune that was in the early 70s that grew a lot of pot, but they were wiped out during the AIDS crisis, and there's only a few surviving members, but that whole history, that culture, is virtually lost.
So when will he consider the 420 archive finished?
Never.
Hoover would love to eventually start a museum dedicated to the era of cannabis prohibition. That's a risky endeavor, though, especially if the exhibits are subject to seizure. In a noisy exhibition hall nearby, I wandered into the Hemp Museum and talked to curator Amy Fisher. Her exhibits date back to proclamations from King George III and include hemp ropes and sails.
Cotton sails would not have been strong enough to get us across the oceans with the hurricanes and weather conditions that we have.
And it looks like you've got something that's historical but especially significant now. It's called Rising from the Ashes, and it sounds like your museum was affected by the fires.
Yes, we lost a lot of funding due to the fires and stuff.
How did your museum get started?
I was working, and I still work, with the Jack Hare Foundation.
Jack Hare wrote The Emperor Wears No Clothes,
yes,
right?
Yes, he did. He was an awesome man.
Jack Hare was a lifelong legalization activist who is credited with the quote, "I'm not saying hemp is going to save the world, but it's the only thing that can." His book, The Emperor Wears No Clothes, Hemp and the Marijuana Conspiracy, was published in 1985. In it, he argued that the U.S. government had deliberately suppressed the knowledge of how to use hemp as a renewable source of fuel, fiber, paper, medicine, and nutrition. In addition to royal proclamations, Fisher's collection includes a variety of 19th-century gazettes, filled with ads for medications made from cannabis, heroin, and opium. She has a photograph of a car with plastic components she says are made from hemp. It seems like just about anything that can be made from hemp.
We have hemp purses. We have hemp coffee filters. We have a hemp voodoo doll from Haiti. And then we have a hemp birdhouse.
For our last stop on the Cannabis History Tour, we'll chat with Lisa Collar, publisher of a magazine called The Cannapolitan. We stood a little ways from the Third Eye Pinecones booth as Collar remembered her efforts on the campaign to pass Prop 215, the Compassionate Use Act of 1996.
You know, at that time we thought, oh great, it's good for glaucoma, it's great for nausea, and great for cancer patients. And I enjoyed smoking it, so why not? And so I signed up, got all my petition forms, and I went out to the colleges, to the grocery stores, and got signatures. And back then, I didn't know they paid people to do that. I mean, I just did it voluntarily. It was exciting when it passed in 96, and we set the standard for the rest of the country there for going forward for medical cannabis.
Collar personified the conflicts of many revelers and business people at this year's Cup. They're proud about setting that standard, but they're also wary about big companies coming in and turning their renegade operations into exploitive corporate ventures. At the same time, there are some parts of the past that don't get the wistful nostalgia treatment.
I remember back in the day going to the pot guy's house to buy your weed and the uncomfortableness that went along with that. So hopefully the education will come through And people will still remember and respect that there are people that are still in jail for this right now, and hopefully we'll get them out, and that, too, the struggle's not over.
I'm Sarah Reif for the KRCB North Bay Report.